The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 126 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I am joined, as always, by Zach Fogsnout. Zach, how you doing?
How you doing, Hat?
Doing okay. How's your festival going?
I'm okay. A bit tired, but from all the festivities, but we'll get over it. Yeah, we had an expansion, and it's time to talk about. We had a patch as well, so it's time to talk about the post patch impressions and the post meta impressions or whatever.
It's post-patch, but still early. It's very early.
Yeah, so I want to make myself clear. This podcast is going to talk about developments both before the patch and after the patch, because you will find out that the patch didn't do much. And there's actually a lot of surprising developments, things that people are probably going to hear about the first time. Because it's completely under the radar, and these things are happening regardless of the patch. The patch didn't change anything, didn't really change the trajectory of decks. It did something for one deck, and that's kind of it.
Yep, but otherwise, it's a new format, and even with some early outliers, there's so much going on.
Yeah, the thing is about the outliers. I wanna mention something about that. I suspect that what's happening is that the early outliers are just decks that were figured out on day one or before day one. Two of the most dominant decks in the first few days of the patch were card for card lists that we posted in the Theorycrafting article. And since those decks were solved, figured out, completely refined, perfect 30 or 40 on day minus one, then they had a head start, right? They dominated the decks that were not refined, were not solved, were not figured out on day one. And when you give things time, when you give classes time to figure things out, to experiment and try to develop the strategies, refine strategies that can compete, you get surprising results. Suddenly, other classes are recovering. Suddenly, a class that seemed unplayable on day one looks quite competitive on day four or day five. So, which brings me to my next point, which is that I don't like these early patches. I don't like them. I think that these patches, if you're nerfing decks on day three of the patch based on one day of data, what ends up happening is you're just nerfing the decks that were solved and refined first. If you trap yourself there. Now, this patch, if you're making a patch and you're nerfing something after one day of data, what you need to nerf are things that are such egregious power outliers. They're so insane. This is a patch for the Ashes of Outland Demon Hunter. This is the patch for completely toxic play patterns like a turn four Kel'Thas Blowout or some Shock Spitter nonsense or things that are not necessarily the most powerful stuff, but things that are very, very unpleasant. Those are the things that you nerf in a day three patch. If you start tweaking and nerfing things just because they look powerful based on one day of data, then I'm gonna disagree with that. That thing is just gonna backfire. You're just making pointless nerfs. And the patch that we had in this expansion, the day three patch, this was exactly that. It was like, oh, which decks are doing well on day one? We're just gonna nerf all of them. And that's what happened, and it didn't really contribute anything to the format. It didn't really help at all. It didn't In fact, like, one of the nerfs is pretty funny in terms of usefulness or effectiveness, and was completely bizarre. But yeah, we'll get to that. But my point is, let the meta breathe, let things play out, and there could be some surprises. And I will admit, day one, things look grim in terms of there were three classes that were far above the best. But the reason why they were the best is, again, they were kind of solved. And the other classes didn't know what to do. And now you're starting to learn. You see, oh, they actually know what they're doing now. And they're actually starting to look competitive. So this is my message. Day one patches are... If the day one patch, what it does is just nerf the best decks on day one. No, that's not the point of this patch. That is not the point of this patch. This is like, you're taking this patch for you're turning a purpose that is, like, again, highly egregious play patterns that are just extremely toxic and unpleasant, or extreme power outliers that completely choke the format. Neither of those things happened right now. There was no need for that patch. That patch was lip service rather than anything that was actually effective. So I really dislike that patch, and I think it was pointless. And if you're making a pointless patch, it's better not to make a patch at all. But let's get to the actual meta developments.
Well, the patch isn't going to impact how we look at early data in terms of the first report. It was three small nudges. Not going to say irrelevant, but I'm going to say it doesn't stop us from analyzing what's been going on. So,
I mean, the report will reflect post-patch data. We're not going to count the data from before the patch. I'm just saying that most of the things are not going to change or have not changed as a result of the patch. And I'll note the exceptions in this podcast.
So, we will have the report on Thursday the 20th, the podcast on Saturday the 22nd, as usual, normal timing there. Let's just get right into it. We're going to start with the class that is three classes, and all three of them are good. Let's start with Death Knight.
Yeah, so Death Knight had an advantage, an obvious advantage going into this expansion, that it just didn't go through rotation. It didn't lose any of its cards going into the new year. And the structure of its existing archetypes have not changed at all. So, for example, Blood Death Knight, there's a list in the Theorycrafting article that we posted, that I tweaked, I made, and published, of Blood Death Knight with a few new cards like Ghost Rider, Tour Guide, Arcanite Ripper,
Screaming Banshee,
that is a highlight card. That list is perfect 40. Was perfect 40 up until the patch, at least. And it was clean. It was perfect. I looked at it. It performed exceptionally well. That was, based on the first few days, was actually the best deck of the format. It was competing with Outcast DH, but it was a pretty significant counter to Outcast DH. It just dominated, and there weren't any decks with hard inevitability in the early days of the patch that could compete with its late game. Its late game of just grinding you down was very, very effective. And Blood Death Knight was a tier S performer based on the first few days of the patch. And what I'm about to say is happening regardless, like, it was happening before the patch occurred. And it's a development that's continuing right now. At top MMRs, at high MMRs, Blood Death Knight is beginning to get pretty significantly countered. People are figuring out new strategies with high inevitability and very effective win conditions that are making it difficult for the Blood Death Knight to compete in the late game. In fact, I would say at top Legend, Blood Death Knight is trending to be a tier 3 deck. This sounds like a shock, but it's almost losing. It's about to lose its positive win rate. Not only is it not tier S, at high MMRs, it might not even have a positive win rate because it's getting countered pretty hard. It's very popular. It's very vulnerable. If you remember, Had, I told you a few days ago when Blood Death Knight was dominating, surely people will figure out ways to target this deck. It's a sitting duck for inevitability. And this has really transpired. This ended up happening and at high MMR, where decks are first developed, right? Where decks with new strategies first appear at high MMR, and the meta is most advanced in its development, Blood Death Knight does not look like a power outlier whatsoever. The nerf to Construct Quarter, that's a card you just take out of your deck. You put Amalgam of the Deep. I tweeted out the suggestion of how to adjust. Construct Quarter is no longer a good card. It was one of the worst cards in every Death Knight deck before the patch. It was a card that if there was no patch and it was not nerfed, I would have told you guys next week potentially to consider cutting Construct Quarter. Yes, 3 charges Construct Quarter at 4 mana was a bad card in all Death Knight decks, and I strongly considered just cutting it from the deck. And now that it got nerfed, then even more so, this card is not going to be in any Death Knight deck going forward. At least my expectation, that is my expectation, as long as people listen to that advice and actually cut the card, because right now it's a liability. It's more and more of a bad card, so it's even weaker than before, so there's no reason to run it. And again, once, like, the reason why this change is pointless is because once Death Knights cut the card and just put something else, the next best thing, then I expect that Death Knight decks will hardly notice a difference in terms of power level. So what's happening here is there is natural meta correction that's beginning to happen at high MMRs, in which Blood Death Knight is beginning to struggle. It's popular, it's a deck that's grindy, but it's very slow. It gives you time to develop a late game plan, and if you have a good plan against it, you're looking good. There are multiple decks right now that are emerging that answer Blood Death Knight really well, and it's perfect matchup spread that looked amazing. Like day one, day two, it had no bad matchups. It was unstoppable. It had no reds. Now, when I look at its matchup spread over the last couple of days at high MMR brackets, it loses to a lot of things. It's starting to lose to a lot of things. Like, its matchup spread is starting to resemble the matchup spread that it had before this expansion. So what needed to happen was for players to figure out things that are not intuitive and easy to figure out after a rotation and after a new expansion. You need to figure out, it's really tough to figure out what you need to do in a late game. Sometimes it's a lot easier to figure out aggressive decks, early game strategies, what they need to do, what cards they need to run. When it comes to late game, there's more elaborate stuff, more elaborate decisions that need to be made. And a lot of them have to do with trying to feel out the meta first and see what the meta is doing so you can have the perfect response for it. And this is what's happening. So Blood Death Knight, not a threat whatsoever, not a power outlier whatsoever. This was happening either way. The nerf to Construct Quarter did not change that. Now, there is one thing that I will mention is that Blood Death Knight is still very, very dominant at low MMRs. In addition, some of these counters to Blood Death Knight that are very effective might be, you know, high skill cap decks. They might be decks that aren't going to be very popular at low MMR brackets. So it's possible that Death Knight will be like a Blood Death Knight will be like a pure Paladin deck that's very dominant at low MMRs, but actually quite weak at high MMRs. It might be that situation where there will be a big disparity in the power level of the deck from the low MMR brackets and the high MMR brackets, and it'll be kind of in the middle of things, like an upper diamond or something like that. There might be some gradient in terms of how good Blood Death Knight is. In addition, it's very possible that the reason why there is such a discrepancy is because people add bronze or silver or gold. are playing day one meta. They're still playing that day one meta, and the strategies that are currently being discovered and are just emerging at high MMR, they're not even aware of them. It's very possible. We'll see how that develops. But for me, what it appears to be is Blood Death Knight just was refined on day one, had the perfect 40. There were no late game strategies that were figured out yet that could compete with it, with its game plan in the late game. But its game plan is still very vulnerable to high inevitability. And once Blood Death Knight became the target, players are smart. Top players are smart. They know what they need to do. They figure out a way to beat it. And now it's looking very, very vulnerable at the high MMR. And I expect to see that to trickle down to some degree. I'm just not sure what the degree is going to be. But I guarantee you that even without the patch, even without the balance changes, Blood Death Knight was not going to be a tier S deck or anywhere near that, at least from Diamond and above, right? Low MMR brackets, it still looks very good. I'm not sure the amount of trickling down that's going to happen with some of these decks. I'll mention the decks that counter Blood Death Knight. We'll see if they're all high skill cap, niche, niche high MMR decks or not. But there will be some discrepancy for sure. So that's Blood Death Knight. Again, if you want to run the best Blood Death Knight list, take the list from the Theorycrafting. It was perfect. It was honestly amazing how it was like card for card perfect. Banshee is amazing. Ghost Rider is a really good value engine. Turns out to be a super card for the deck. It's much better than Famished Fool, for example. Just cut Construct Quarter, run Amalgam of the Deep. You can find more, like, Discover is very powerful in Death Knight. You can find another Mograine. Sometimes in the late game, a second Mograine is insane. Like, in matchup like Control Priest, something like that is very, very relevant. So, Blood Death Knight is a good deck, for sure. It's a lot better than it was before this expansion, for sure. But I don't see it as an outlier in terms of power. We'll see what happens at lower MMR brackets after more information trickles down. That was Blood. I want to talk about Frost as well. Frost is the same thing. In fact, Frost is even more of a deck that did not change whatsoever going from the previous expansion to this expansion, because the best Frost Death Knight list that you're supposed to play is exactly the same list that you played during March of the Lich King. The list that propagated is a list that runs hardcore Cultist, which is the new Frost card of this expansion.
The Meaty list.
Yes, I believe Meaty propagated it. And Hardcore Cultist is a garbage card. It's a garbage card. It is not a card that this deck should be running. At least from my impression, based on the current data, Cultist is trash. So you shouldn't even be running Cultist. And now you shouldn't be running Construct Quarter. So you'll probably be making a little bit of a tweak there in the last two slots. I think that you probably want to run Rowdy Fan in order to activate your Foul Egg. Another possibility is just to cut Foul Egg altogether and find a different early game. That's also possible. I'll look into it. But the point is, Frost Death Knight, at least up until the patch, did not need to run any new cards to be very successful. Lost nothing to rotation. The list was figured out. Two cards off, doesn't matter. Very, very dominant. And Frost Death Knight looks very strong throughout ladder at the moment. But again, at the high MMR brackets, where people are more, meta is more advanced, then it's not looking as intimidating. I will say that Frost Death Knight, since it's not the target of the format. The format is not trying to target Frost Death Knight. They're trying to target Blood Death Knight. So Frost is kind of getting away with it. It has a low play rate, so it's not being hard targeted. Also, it helps it that people are targeting Blood, since Blood counters Frost. So right now, Frost is actually the more successful deck than Blood Death Knight based on the last few days, where people started saying, okay, we need to counter Blood. We need to get that deck down. And it's working on blood, but they're not targeting frost. And if blood's play rate drops because people are targeting it so hard, then that helps Frost Deathknight. So Frost Deathknight looks very good. But again, I will note, this deck has no new cards. It has no way to improve. There is zero scope for improvement for this deck. Everybody else is going to catch up. I'm not sure where it lands once everyone catches up. So when it comes to, am I concerned about Frost Deathknight as a power outlier in the format? Not really. I'm not saying, I don't think this deck necessarily needs to be nerfed or needs to be addressed because of the way that it currently performs. But it is a good deck, and if you don't have new cards and you don't have money to buy packs, then you can take Frost Deathknight with no new cards and do pretty well right now. Frost from Fury is a really good card against a lot of strategies. Finally, Unholy doesn't see much play, but is also very good.
Once again, still underrated, underappreciated, like, just hitting people in the face works fine, and it has infinite boards, but it loses to the other Death Knight, so it's not as popular.
It loses to Frost and Blood, so it's not as popular. Since Death Knight is so popular, then it's kind of daunting to take this deck into ladder, run into Blood and Frost, and feel bad. But Unholy is looking very good against the rest of the field. And it's a deck that, you know, once people start targeting Blood more, and maybe Frost as well will get some heat, then Unholy will rise again. But again, like, it's already looking very good. I will say there are all sorts of experiments. I think out of all the three archetypes, Unholy is the one that saw the most experiment in build diversity. People were trying all sorts of things. We ran a list in the Theorycrafting article that was a bit different with, like, Naval Mines. Naval Mines are not good. Deathcrawl is also a card that might not be as core as it sounds. It's very possible that the best Unholy Death Knight does not rely on eggs kind of stuff and just runs early game, you know, minion swarm type of thing. Especially now that Construct Quarter was nerfed, it might be correct to just not run any eggs, like Nerubian and stuff like that. Might not be what Unholy is looking to do. It's very possible that they're I'm starting to see lists that run no eggs and no Construct Quarter, and you just run like Rowdy Fan and Necrolite, you know, just minion swarm. And that deck seems to do very well, these sort of builds. So we might, like, Deathcrawl might not be as insane as we thought it would be in this archetype. Might not be as important.
The list I like of Unholy, Wuling, when I look for on-curve streamlined aggro decks, I like checking out Wuling, and he's just no frills, no nonsense, no death rattle stuff, just hit him.
That might be the list that I'm talking about. The Z-Run Necrolite?
Necrolite and Rowdy Fan. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the list. So I think Wuling, if you want to, I think that list is a good starting point for this current format. If you want a good Unholy list, go to Wuling's Twitter.
Always a good follow for aggro players. He likes using two ofs and hitting people in the face with good curves. Big fan.
I don't know. He's not just an aggro player. He has refined plenty of decks that were not aggro. He's a pretty good deck builder in general. So yeah, that is for Death Knight. Again, like, the Construct Quarter nerf for me was bizarre. I understand, like, for me, the logic is Death Knight looked very good in the first couple of days. Team 5 panicked, said, what do we do? How do we nerf all of these decks? They said, let's nerf the card that's included in all of them. The thing is, though, Construct Quarter is one of the worst cards, if not the worst card, in every Death Knight deck before the patch. So the fact that you nerfed it is not going to change the power level. You're going to bump it down just maybe a tiny bit because people are still going to run Quarter. But once I tell people, just cut Quarter, run the next best card, then Death Knight will recover from that. However, thankfully, the reason why Death Knight started so well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that, again, it didn't need, like, it was refined on day one, pretty much. Blood and Frost, day one, we're figure out. Day minus one, we're figure out. You didn't need to do anything to try to devise how these decks need to adjust to a new format. They were the format. They were stomping on all the things that were janky and bad. And that's why they dominate. And now people, you know, other decks, other classes are catching up. I still expect Death Knight to be a very strong class. It might need a nerf or two, maybe, as well. But it's not an outlier. It's not a big issue. It was just a front runner. I would call it a front runner. But other decks are catching up. And in terms of power, we'll see. Again, I am mostly interested in seeing the MMR disparity. Because, you know, bronze players, gold players, they're in a different environment. In that environment, Death Knight looks really overpowered. And the question is it because they're playing the day one meta still? Or is it that these decks that counter Death Knight do not translate well to low MMRs, which might keep Death Knight perpetually overpowered at these rank brackets, to the point it might encourage Team 5 to do something about it, right? Because Team 5 still care about the low MMR brackets and they want to have a diverse experience there. Though, to counter that point, at bronze, people don't tend to overplay the best decks anyway. Like, the meta at bronze is more diverse because people like playing more of the bad decks over there. So, might not be as big of an issue. But again, Death Knight started strong, a front runner, not an outlier whatsoever. It's just a good class. I wish that every class in this format was as good as Death Knight. That's what I'm going to say.
And it is a unique challenge for Team 5 in that the three different rune types play differently, have different matchup, have different win rates. Before Death Knight existed, those would be different classes. Unless there was, like, any time in history we've had a single class with three format-defining decks, it's because of one busted thing that they all had access to. That's not the case here. They're fundamentally different, but they're still all Death Knight. So we're now entering into an era where sometimes Death Knight is going to be the most popular class, even though class popularity no longer tells the story. But if you look at the graph, it's a huge chunk. So how they handle that is going to be interesting to see, and I imagine their philosophy will evolve over time.
I mean, I don't see much difference between, like, it's not that big of a difference to have multiple archetypes in a class that play differently compared to what Death Knight is doing. Death Knight is just multiple archetypes that play differently. And you can balance them independently from each other. Like, you don't need to treat them as this one bulk. What happened here, and the reason why all of the Death Knight's decks are doing well, is, again, there was no rotation, and pretty much it was very easy to figure out how to optimally build and play Death Knight decks going into this year, compared to every other class that had to scramble and figure out a new identity. So that was the timing of the release of Death Knight, that they released it in December and planned into having it go into rotation without enduring rotation. So this is what you're seeing. But again, there's no great need to panic right now. I do understand and I sympathize with players, especially at the lower MMR brackets, that are enduring a Death Knight that seems very overpowered because of that. But the truth is that if this happens every time there's a new expansion and there's an OP deck or a frontrunner deck, that frontrunner deck will be answered effectively at the lower MMR brackets pretty much last because of the way that things trickle down and the flow of information. So I want to see the meta develop and seeing whether there's any actual need to do something about Death Knight, because based on the current data, I don't really see a clear-cut answer of, oh, we have to address this. This is OP. This is unstoppable. I'm not seeing that from Death Knight. So let's chill and see how the meta develops in that direction.
Right. So the thing that Team 5 has to grapple with is not the power, it's the perception. The perception of seeing the portrait. And that's the challenging part.
Yeah, but again, like, I don't think that you need to nerf so early things based on perception. Perception, for me, is something that you address like 6 weeks into the expansion or a month into the expansion, if the perception remains. Like, because day one perceptions can be very misleading, and you should not be nerfing based on...
This is not a defense of the 1 day of data, 3 days in, nerf three cards. That's not what I'm defending. But I'm saying in the 2 week patch and the 6 week patch, they may need to do something to make it so that the best deck of this format, like, so that it isn't April of the Lich King. Because you really, really, really don't want the best decks hanging on that long. Maybe they don't need to hit it super hard in the 2 week patch, but I feel like they probably will do some nudges. And then the 6 week patch, if it sticks around, some stuff's going to go down.
I don't even know if you need to nerf it in the 2 week patch. I'm saying, like, you're going to hear this podcast ad. You're going to hear about some of the developments that I'm mentioning. And after this podcast is over, you're going to ask yourself, is Death Knight even the best class? Like, do we even, like, think about, like, it's eons from now. Like, the 6 weeks patch is eons from now. Who knows where the meta is going to be headed by that time? People are figuring out things on a daily basis. So there is no need to make knee-jerk reactions about Death Knight, for sure. Based on the spread, I'll tell you, Blood Death Knight is not even good. At High MMRs, like, there's tournaments, people are already, like, there's some pros that are asking for my advice. And their perception is like Death Knight is like auto included and auto banned. And I'm asking, are you sure? Are you sure?
I mean,
because I'm not sure.
I do want to ban a newer class that starts with a D and is two words. I do want to do that.
I'm tempted, based on this matchup spread, to just make a hard target Blood Death Knight and leave it up lineup.
Okay, but would you want to play that lineup? Ugh.
Yes. These lots of really cool decks are the ones that are countering Blood Death Knight. We'll get to that. Let's talk about it. What's the next class? Is it Demon Hunter?
The next class is the one I would actually ban is Demon Hunter, because Demon Hunter is spooky.
I don't know. Okay, so here's the thing. Day one, there was a amazing deck that you could find in the Theorycrafting article at Vicious Syndicate.
It's also really fun.
Called Outcast DH. Perfect 30. Solved before the expansion even launched. Looked very powerful in the first day. Looked OP. Then, you know, the Blood Death Knights rose to counter it. It was a very effective counter. And Outcast DH was beginning to look less and less powerful.
Good, fine. It was okay. But, like, it's definitely not an outlier.
Yes, it was definitely not an outlier. And then Team 5, based on 1 day of data, panicked because they saw Outcast DH was so good that they nerfed it on day 3 when it wasn't even, like just a perspective. Outcast DH was nerfed on day 3 when the deck was like had a play rate of like 5% at top legend, where the meta is most advanced. People barely played Outcast DH anymore, and they nerfed it because it did well on day one. Why did it do well on day one? Because it was solved. It was refined on day one. So it feels like I really dislike these patches where you're just nerfing the things that were refined. You're not nerfing the things that are the most powerful decks. You just nerfed the things that happened to be refined early. And that's what ends up happening to the patch. So Outcast DH, after the nerf, got a big drop in its performance. It was affected, definitely affected by the Walloper nerf.
Now, I will point out, this is not a nerf. This is a reversion. Do you remember they buffed Ventral Walloper?
I know.
I forgot. I actually forgot until I looked at the wiki and it's like, wait a second.
I didn't forget. I remember that. They basically reverted the buff. I mean, it's fine. And thankfully, this deck, which is really, really fun and really cool to play, it is a really cool deck, is not dead because of this nerf. It's still fine. It's still okay. I expect it to be like a tier 2 deck, something like that. It gets countered pretty significantly by Blood Death Knight. Blood Death Knight is a problem matchup. It also gets countered by Frost Death Knight. There are other matchups that definitely beat it before the nerf. Again, I'm not just looking at post-patch. Even before the nerf, this deck was going to be absolutely okay. there was absolutely no need to actually nerf it. The nudge did something, lower it further, but it wasn't going to be overpowered. It's a deck that I am 100% positive that if we posted the perfect list a week into the expansion instead of a day before, this deck would not have been nerfed. That's the absurdity of it all. That if this deck was figured out later, it would not have been nerfed because it wouldn't have looked overpowered. It looked overpowered because it was refined, was played, built perfectly day one, and it just stomped on all the janky decks and had high win rate. Team 5 looked at the data, day one data, panicked, nerfed it. That's what happened. So Outcast DH is okay, but again, Outcast DH even before the patch was not even the best Demon Hunter deck. Not even the best Demon Hunter deck. So ask me how what is actually was developing to be the best Demon Hunter deck, and that is Relic Demon Hunter.
Do you want me to ask you?
Relic Demon Hunter. No, don't. No,
you
I already answered. I screwed it up. I screwed it up. I already said it. I already answered.
You made me irrelevant.
Okay. So Relic Demon Hunter, which by the way, okay, so there are a lot of things that happen with Relic Demon Hunter. Relic Demon Hunter, day one, day two, did not see any play whatsoever. Almost no play. Had a play rate like 0.5%, something like that. I remember
it was a relic of the past expansion. I get it.
Yeah. You're on point, Hat. Okay.
People threw it in the vault. Okay, you can go now. This is what you get for not letting me have my turn. This is what you get.
Okay. People started searching for ways to counter Blood Death Knight after it rose in play, you know, stomped on Outcast DH a bit. And looked OP. It looked OP. And people started devising Relic Demon Hunter. They took the list that we had in the Theorycrafting article, took out Chaos Strikes, which admittedly is not a great card right now after Jace is gone. And, you know, they added the Felerin. Casey made a list with Fizzle and Felerin. And Felerin, let me tell you, that card is so insane in Outcast DH because of the Outcast pool right now is so high quality. It's just a good standalone card. You can even put it in a deck that's not about Outcast in Relic DH, and it's still going to be very good. Fizzle is bait. Fizzle is not what you want to run. So the Relic DH list, I think 29 cards are figured out. I don't know about the 30th card. It could be a Zilag. It could be something else. There's all sorts of things people are doing. But what I do know about it is that this deck beats Blood Death Knight. This deck is very good in the late game still. Even after rotation, its late game is very strong. But it's not a perfect deck. And by the time it started countering Blood Death Knight and it started to look tier 1, it looked like a tier 1 deck. Something else happened that I'm keeping as a surprise that is already knocking this deck back. And now it might be like a tier 2 deck. So it's been 5 days and Relic went from completely unknown to potentially overpowered to the point where high-level players were starting to talk about nerfing Relics. But by the time Team 5 nerfed Outcast DH, they nerfed Walloper, there were people saying, okay, but what about Relic DH? We need to nerf Relic DH. And since then, this deck is already looking okay and we don't need to nerf it. It's so important for me to emphasize this just to tell you how you should not overreact over every little development that's happening in the meta. Because you can snapshot any sort of situation in a format and decide this deck is OP, we're nerfing it. And 2 days later, it's no longer OP because of natural meta developments. So Relic DH is a good deck to have in the format. It's fine. Its matchup spread has weaknesses, has strength. It's a nice deck to have in the format. Totally fine. Don't need to touch it. Don't need to nerf it. Leave it alone.
Now, there's a note on Demon Hunter. Do you know about going down swinging? You know about this thing?
Yeah. I kind of not sure if I want to talk about it too much because I'm not sure if it's a real strategy or it's an exploit
of a bug. Well, I wouldn't call it an exploit. So, okay. I'm going to explain it. Because lists are going around on Twitter, and this is a PSA, Zach. I want to tell the listeners to not get too attached, because I've already fallen for it, and I know that the days are numbered. I just know it. So the way it works Going down swinging, the new Demon Hunter Legendary spell. You give your hero immune, you attack all enemy minions, and you give your hero +2 attack. Multi-strike gives your hero extra attacks. The current interaction with going down swinging is if you multi-strike first and hold the restricted attacks that can only hit minions, and then play going down swinging, something about going down swinging turns those restricted attacks into unrestricted, and you can attack face multiple times. It is unclear if this is a bug or not, but Zach, here is my test. Can you explain why it wouldn't be? Can you explain why this should work that way? Because I'm pretty tuned in to the Hearthstone rules, and I can rationalize it, but I can't explain why it should work this way. And until somebody does...
No, it should not work this way.
It doesn't say it on the card, and the only reason that going down swinging is seeing play is to filter multi-strike into give your hero Wind Fury X number of times. I don't believe this
Mega
is intended.
Wind Fury.
Yes. I don't believe it's intended. I can't explain it. We have no dev confirmation, but I'd be very surprised if it's intended. So, I'm telling you that even though you might be able to win games with it today, and you should play with the cards that currently work in the system, don't get too attached. I'd be really surprised if this stuck around. I don't have confirmation, but I'd be really surprised.
I don't even know if this is actually good. Like, even though it's an OTK.
It's fun. That's why I like it. It's fun to smack a bunch of times.
It's not really... It's something that's really... maybe gains traction past 24 hours. It's not even gaining traction much. It's a weird one. Like, I don't know what to say about it. But I have no way to comment on it data-wise how good that thing is. Because I actually have no idea. But yeah, forget... It's not... Just play Relics and Outcast. These are fun decks and... They're good. They're not overpowered. They're just good.
Yep.
Okay, Paladino. Paladin was my big blind spot when it comes to the preview and the theory crafting. I definitely underestimated some cards in the Paladin set. And when I think about we got a lot of things right. But the things that we got wrong, I feel like I just got baited by the core set. It happened with Paladin because of Muster for Battle. And Muster for Battle just gave me a blind spot when it comes to Disco Maul. And Disco Maul is an insane card. And pure Paladin running Disco Maul and like Divine Shield package, which like Jitterbug and... Funkfin, which are, by the way, they're not great cards, right? They're not like it's not like these cards are insane, but that specific build with Disco Maul looks very good. But here's the thing about pure Paladin, and we're seeing it like pretty much every expansion since that thing was since its inception as an archetype. This deck again was not refined by us. We had a blind spot when it comes to that build. But it was figure out like hour one of the expansion. And pure Paladin stomped on all the unrefined garbage. It's just a deck that is very good at stomping bad decks. Very good. But other decks are catching up. And not only are they catching up, I personally think pure Paladin is trash. This deck has a... over 60% win rate at bronze through gold right now. At top legend, this deck is tier 3. And it might be headed to tier 4. Potentially. If things continue to develop in this direction. There is one matchup that it might remain relevant because of. I'm still keeping that a secret for now. But it doesn't beat anything that's actually good. Like when it comes to pure Paladin, there's maybe one matchup or maybe one and a half matchup that pure Paladin actually wins against a refined deck in the format. Everything else, it gets stomped. It gets stomped by Death Knights, especially the Frost type. It gets stomped by Outcast Demon Hunter. It gets stomped by Relics. It gets stomped by Rogue. It gets stomped. It beats garbage. And in a settled format where you only play against the best decks, or decks that are refined and good, I'm not sure Pure Paladin is any good at all. It's just bad. It just looks bad. It kind of has the same issues that I kind of thought it would have, where it's awful once it falls behind and just unplayable. And it kind of does. Like, people are learning how to play against it, and I'm seeing a trickle down of that response to Pure Paladin. But Pure Paladin right now still looks OP outside of Legend. Still looks OP. How long is it going to look OP? I'm not sure. But this deck is definitely has a very, very low skill ceiling. And what we know about these kind of decks, they fall off hard after a week or two. Very, very hard. How hard are they going to fall at the lower MMR brackets? I still expect Pure Paladin to be very good there. But did it need to be nerfed? This was happening regardless of the nerf to Light Ray, by the way. Pure Paladin was falling off at Legend, regardless. We'll see. I don't think it needed to be nerfed. It was just refined early, figured out, stomped on the bad decks. Again, Team 5 panicked. Pure Paladin's win rate is really high. Let's nerf it. I don't think that was necessary. Like, next week, top Legend, this deck might not be playable. Might not be playable. I'm being serious. But, you know, we'll see. It's still going to be super good at low ranks. And outside of Legend right now, it looks very powerful, obviously. But there are definitely ways to exploit it and beat it. And if you are a good player or you learn how to play against it, its turns are very, very telegraphed, and you know exactly what you can expect from it. And if you do that and you play into it well, then you're going to have much more success. This deck has a very low skill ceiling, very low player agency, and is very, very predictable. So is Pure Paladin scary? No. I'm not scared by Pure Paladin. It has one matchup at high MMR that might become relevant, but against most other things, it's just not good. Not a good deck, actually. Like, a pros came to me, Paladin, told him, hey, you know, Paladin is low-key garbage. I'm serious.
Is there any other Paladin deck?
Okay, big Paladin. Oh, okay, so...
Ooh, Frontlines ends it. Ends it.
Okay, so there's some... Okay, so there's some Mech Paladin. And Mech Paladin is not looking as good as Pure Paladin, but it's still looking competitive. Like, it looks okay. But again, like, it's going to fall off at high MMR. It's not going to be a good deck at high MMR. People, I think, are currently trying it out because it's good against Relic Demon Hunter. Pure Paladin sucks against Relic Demon Hunter. But Mech Paladin does better in that matchup. So people are picking it up a bit and trying it out in order to kind of target the Relics. But I don't think it beats Relics either. I don't think Mech Paladin beats Relics. Like, maybe it goes 50-50, but it doesn't beat Relics. So I don't see the point. It's like a watered-down Pure Paladin. Like, it does well, okay. Again, at low MMRs, it's very competitive and looks has a good win rate. But again, it stomped on some bad stuff. It stomps on bad decks, and it's not that amazing. There's also, you know, the dude build of Pure Paladin, which looks inferior to the Disco Mall Paladin, but it doesn't have as big of a fall off at high MMR compared to the Disco Mall Funkfin kind of stuff. So I'll look into that. I'll follow it. I don't expect much from it. Again, like, these Paladin decks, very low player agency. They're gonna be like noob stompers, but you can definitely do better against it if you play well into it. If you know how to exploit its weaknesses, which is it does absolutely nothing. If it falls behind a board, Countess is pretty much the only chance it's got to pull out wins. Yeah. So that's kind of Paladin. Again, it's okay. We didn't need to nerf Light Ray. You nerfed Light Ray anyway, fine. Maybe you needed to nerf it eventually for the, you know, lower MMR bracket so that they won't feel like Pure Paladin is an oppressive deck, but this deck is not an issue. Okay. Druid.
Oh boy. You ready? You ready to talk about Druid? Druid has been the most fascinating class for me to observe over the past couple days.
Yeah, so Druid is, I think, one of the perfect examples why you should not panic based on day one of data. Because based on day one of data, Druid needed buffs. You needed buffs across the board. This class is unplayable. This class is completely dead. Druid had like a 40% win rate on day one. It was complete trash, unplayable. Blizzard, what are you doing? You gave it a trash set. It's terrible. We can't play Druid. It's dead. And today, 5 days later, it's looking good. People are figuring out Druid looks very competitive. Druid looks like one of the best classes.
I got legend with Druid.
Because people figured out what Druid wants to do in the late game. And it took a while because it's not easy to figure out what Druid needs to do in the late game. And there's some surprising stuff that Druid figure out what to do. So I'm going to call this... I'm not sure how we're going to name the Druid archetypes. There's one main archetype. It's a ramp druid, basically. But the main win condition of druid is Tony Jailer. Tony Jailer is the main win condition. So we might call it Tony Druid. I do like the name Tony. It just feels right. So we might call it Tony Druid. So this Tony Druid deck had multiple iterations. I saw it in the early, in day one as well, and it was not good. But there's some things that people tweaked and added and refined, and the new iterations are showing quite a bit of promise. And the main thing that, the main reason why they're showing promise is that there is a new package in town, guys. There is a new package in town that helps the Druid clear the board. And that is what Druid was missing. Druid was missing the Scale of Onyxia. It was missing the Lingering Zombie Spammy Arcanist. It was missing a combo that allowed it to turn the corner. And it has that combo now. If you remember, I talked about a certain neutral minion in the preview article that worked really well with Jailer because it's really nutty with immunity. And that minion is called Mishmash Mosher. It turns out that Druid has another way to give it immunity without playing Jailer. If you remember a card called Attorney at Maw, which is a 2-mana 1/3 that had to choose one, silence a minion, or give a minion immune this turn. We always used Attorney at Maw up until now to just silence something. Turns out, for the first time, the other utilization is now looking amazing, because if you play Mishmash Mosher and you give it immune with Attorney at Maw, it will full clear the board while developing a huge threat that can kill the opponent the very next turn.
This is the combo that 1,000 Reddit posts will be born from.
This combo, this survival gives Druid, and the fact that you can draw Mishmash Mosher with Summer Flower Child and discount it by one is also a big deal. This combo gives Druid a way to fight back. This combo gives Druid some survivability, a swing turn that it can ramp into with Nourish in order to turn the corner. And once this combo started seeing play, Druid started to shoot up in its win rate and its performance. It's still really bad against a deck like Pure Paladin, which is the one matchup that Pure Paladin has at high MMR that might give it some relevance. This is the only deck that Pure Paladin beats. Pretty much, alongside maybe one other deck, but it loses to everything else, kind of. But it beats Tony Druid, even with Mishmash Mosher. Mishmash Mosher is too late for that matchup. But other matchups, that this combo is nutty. And the fact that you also run Jailer, which makes Mishmash Mosher really good post-Jailer, and the fact that you have Tony, so you want to run Jailer anyway. The late game inevitability is there. This win condition, the Tony Jailer win condition with Anubricon, is something that we suggested before the expansion launch and looks very effective against a deck like Blood Death Knight. So Druid is finding late game dominance again. I wouldn't say dominance, but effectiveness. It's good against Blood Death Knight. It's good against Relic Demon Hunter. It's good against two of the prominent late game strategies in the format. It counters Relic Demon Hunter really hard. This is the deck that rose and knocked Relic Demon Hunter down from a position of top player saying we need to nerf Relic Demon Hunter to now, well, it's tier 2, 50% win rate, something like that. It's because the Tony Druids are rising. So, yeah, Tony Druid looks good. Whether it will trickle down and the extent of the refinement and the extent of trickling down to lower ranks, I'm not sure. This deck is still in its diapers. The perfect 30 has not been figured out yet. I am very sure that I'm going to have to do a lot of work with this archetype and figure out what to, you know, how to best optimize it. But I am intrigued. I'm interested to seeing the deck's potential post-refinement. Right now, it looks very promising. In high MMR, it's already tier 2-ish. And again, day one, it was like 40% win rate druid, like as a class, like low 40s. It was completely unplayable, and now it's looking promising. Again, at lower MMRs, people are not aware of the best Tony Druid builds. They're not really familiar with it, and the class still looks pretty garbage. But you're going to see Tony Druid improve over time and through refinement, and it's going to change the format. It's a deck that's going to be an important player in the format. So, yeah, Druid looking good. Looking like it's recovering. Just took time. Like, this is very difficult. This was very difficult to figure out. That you need to play Mishmash Mosher Hat with Eternian Maw. And this is the board clear combo that Druid needed. I don't remember anyone telling me that before the expansion. This is something that people figure out with, you know, lots of games into the new expansion. Once the cards went live. So, nobody played this in Theorycrafting streams. I didn't see that. So, yeah. So, Tony Druid is the real deal. It's the bee's knees. We'll see how good that is after the meta slows down. Other Druid? No.
There are people that are trying low curve where you top at a drum circle. Come on, buddy. It's never top at a drum circle.
No, it's not. I feel like in order to be Death Knight, in order to have the late game, you need the Tony Jailer combo. Otherwise, you don't have the late game. This gives you the late game. And just Mishmash Marshall is just perfect. I thought about Mishmash Marshall in Jailer Warlock. You remember had that list with the Jailer Warlock? I had that in my head. I didn't think about it in Druid. And the fact that it has a Tornian Maw gives you more immunity redundancy and ability to do it earlier. And not have to play Jailer? Yeah, this is it.
And also, I don't mind that Druid's best answer for a board clear is 10 mana. That seems like a healthy spot to be, even though it's a very powerful synergy.
Yeah, but it's actually 9 mana because it's drawn by Slumber Flower Child, and you can also Nourish into it. Like, you play Nourish to ramp
sure.
and get to it as soon as possible. But yeah, it's not like it's OP. It's not OP. It gives Druid a fighting chance. As I said, it gives them a fighting chance and ability to compete because it didn't look like they could compete before that. So yeah, I'm liking it a lot and Druid is fine.
Okay. How about Priest? How's Priest doing?
Okay, so Priest, Priest is the first counter to Blood Death Knight that was discovered. Control Priest looks like a very effective counter to Blood Death Knight. One of those counters that were devised over time. I played this deck. I took a Tic Tacs list and tweaked it a little. Astralor, very good. Fizzle, very bad. Do not play Fizzle. It is Giga Bait. You have too much cards in hand. You can't even open the snapshot. I played that a bit more, and I realized that Fizzle does nothing for this deck.
I'm pretty sure that's the biggest bait card in the format. Like, it's a neutral. It's in a lot of decks that people really want it to be.
I'm seeing Fizzle in so many decks, and it's bad in all of them. Like, people play it in Relic DH. People play it in Control Priest. People play it in Blood Death Knight. It's bait in everything. It sucks. Fizzle sucks. Is it bait in Death Knight? Did I just overreact? Let me remember. Because I looked at it. I don't remember. Oh yeah, Gigabait. Forget it. Gigabait.
That's like, I feel like Blood Death Knight is good because you can just hit people with 5/5s whenever you want to, and then you kill them with Mograine. Like, you don't really want to just turn into this Discover Fest. You get to control the board and then kill them.
Yeah. No, Fizzle sucks. It just sucks. It's not really working in any kind of deck. Yeah, so Control Priest. Yeah, so Control Priest, the list that I revised from TikTok looks very good. The healing, like, runs Flash Heal. The reason why healing is good, there are two reasons. Outcast DH was early in the expansion, was very relevant. So being topped off was quite important. In addition, it's quite helpful against Blood Death Knight because of Mograine. It gives you the ability to survive and outlast or 3 damage a turn. The only games I lost to Blood Death Knight with that deck, like, I went like 7-2 against Blood Death Knight. The only reason I lost is they discovered the second Mograine. 2 Mograines is very hard to win. 6 damage a turn is really hard to beat as a priest.
Yeah, and there's less healing now. Like, you don't just have as much incidental healing because you no longer have Zyrella Hero among a couple other cards.
Yeah. Now, I am saying that Control Priest looks like a counter based on the stats, but there are people telling me that Control Priest doesn't actually beat Blood Death Knight. Like, top players saying that the Blood Death Knight can play differently and actually beat the Priest. I don't know. I don't have confirmation of that. But based on the stats, based on the data, Control Priest does look effective into Blood Death Knight. The problem with Control Priest is, again, it's you can build it to beat one or two things very well, but it's not very good against a wide variety of opponents. Like, Relic DH is a really tough matchup. Tony Druid, obviously, it's a tough matchup. There is a reaction to these high inevitability decks. People are playing Dirty Rats in Control Priest in order to, like, have a chance in those matchups. But Dirty Rat is a terrible, terrible card.
I'm so glad that card didn't end up being relevant, but also it didn't end up being relevant, so probably don't play Dirty Rat.
I mean, it's relevant because people play it. It's relevant because it's popular and it's annoying. It's just not good. Like, it's just not good. Like, maybe if Tony Druid rises to play. Look, I'm gonna not completely rule out Dirty Rat. I can see a world where Dirty Rat is good. Like, if Tony Druid is gonna become a prevalent meta contender, then Dirty Rat could be an apt response to it.
But we were worried it was gonna be pervasive. We were worried about it. That's not gonna happen.
I mean, we'll see. There's a chance that Dirty Rat enters the Control Priest list in this report. It really depends on you know, it's like, for example, it's not good against Blood Death Knight. Dirty Rat is not effective against Blood Death Knight. I can tell you that. It's a waste of a card slot. Like, they have too many minions that are not, it's not useful. But against Demon Hunter Druid, Dirty Rat does make sense. So if the meta becomes more Demon Hunter Druid rather than Death Knight, I can see Dirty Rat being good. But yeah. That's kind of it. Control Priest. So that's Control Priest. There is also Undead Priest. Undead Priest is looking fine. It doesn't lose to, like, it used to beat Blood Death Knight. It still does fine into it. I don't think it beats it, but it's very competitive. The list that we had in the Theorycrafting looks good.
That's a matchup I've played it a bunch. I think I win more than half the time, and I hate playing it. Because it feels so, so close all the time, and it feels like it comes down to Reborn Mind Eater rules. And sometimes they just blow you out with the Vamp Blood, Screaming Banshee turn. You're like, okay. But I think you usually win. But I don't like playing that matchup.
It might have a slight edge. People are trying Swarm builds. They're not looking bad. There might be a good option as well. But in general, Undead Priest looks fine. It looks competitive. I think it should settle around the tier 2-ish range. Right now it looks tier 1 because everything is garbage. So I'm trying to normalize the numbers. In a settled environment, I think it's probably going to be fairly competitive. And looks good. It seems to have been able to survive rotation. So Priest does have 2 decks that are reasonable. Control Priest is a bit more niche. I think that's the usual of Control Priest being niche, very very specific. I think building the perfect 40 for Control Priest is going to be quite challenging because it's probably going to be a different answer depending on where you are on ladder. And also, it really depends on how the meta develops. As I said, like something like Dirty Rat can be good and it can be terrible at the same time at different rack brackets or different timings. Like, I'll have to figure that out. But Priest is alive. Priest is competitive. Priest is fine. Overheal Priest, not good. Priest is not a deck. It is not a deck.
I know. Makes me sad.
It's really bad. And it's not a surprise probably to anyone that it's terrible. Okay. Rogue.
Rogue's got some stuff. Rogue has some secrets that it wasn't ready to reveal right away.
Okay, so Rogue day one looked giga garbage. Giga garbage.
Because everyone knows you can trust day one Rogue data.
Yeah, Rogue is the kind of class that takes time to figure out, and it took its time, and it's figuring itself out. And Miracle Rogue might be the best deck at Top Legend Hat.
How am I somehow both surprised and unsurprised?
I was trying to, trying to build up towards it, but I just decided to just slap it on the table. So there were a lot of questions on how Miracle Rogue is going to approach this expansion with the loss of, Dancer and the potential loss of Draka as a result. What was it going to do? And I know what it's doing. And it's actually pretty clever. What's clever about it is you just drop Draka, but you don't run the combo package because the combo package is garbage. All the new cards are bad for Miracle Rogue. You don't want to run any of them. All these rhyme spinners and beatboxers and disc jockeys. No. Break dances. Forget it. That is not what Miracle Rogue wants to do.
Do you run Bounce Around? The broken legendary spell, he said sarcastically.
Bounce around. Oh my god, what a meta tyrant Bounce Around is.
Do you remember the comparison I made to that card? What I said it was similar to? You remember what I said? Little scabs.
Oh, little scab. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
It's seeing as much play as little scabs did.
Little scabs saw more play than this one. Bounce around. Little scabs was a better card. But yeah. What you do is you run Krabatoa. You remember when we had this entire Krabatoa versus Draka thing? Whether you want to run Krabatoa or not.
Oh, because Casey was tired of low rolling on Edwin, so he tweeted about it. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Hi, Casey.
Casey now a supporter of Krabatoa, actually. And Krabatoa is the Giga Nuts. It is an insane card right now. It is very good. Also, another card that is popping into Miracle Rogue is Queen Ajara. As a win condition, as a secondary win condition that gives you a fighting chance in the late game. And people are also running Hipster.
Okay, so this is the list that I found.
Ruby's list. Yeah, Ruby's list. He's a Japanese player. There's a list from a Japanese player called Ruby. He posted a list that looks very good, except Fizzle is total bait. Just take out the Fizzle.
I was wondering if I was going to beat you to it, but I figured you would say it before
Just
me.
Take out the Fizzle. You run Fan of Knives. Fan of Knives is good against Paladin.
Fan of Knives at 2 mana is so good. I love that card. Oh, man. It's really good against
Outcast Demon Hunter. It's very good against Outcast Demon Hunter because you take out all the tokens that they play. It's also very good against like pretty much any aggressive deck, and it just cycles. It's okay. It's not amazing. It would have been amazing on day one against Outcast DH, but it's a reasonable cycle card. Just take out the Fizzle. The Fizzle is terrible. The reason why you play Hipster is because of the Death Knight matchup. It's actually really good against Death Knight because you can discover, like, if you're playing against Blood, you can just discover like a Nutty Unholy or Frost card. And since the card quality is very high in Death Knight, Hipster actually makes sense. Now, don't be a dummy and keep it in a mulligan to play it on turn two. No, it's just a card. It's just a value card that gives you something you can do. So that's the kind of list. I'm just wondering what the fizzle should be. We'll look into that.
Blood Mage Thalnos is what I'm going to put in.
Oh, Blood Mage Thalnos, good shout with Phantom of Knives, maybe.
It's a 2014 flashback.
We're playing Blood Mage Thalnos, Phantom of Knives again, Hat.
And we have Ghostly Strike. That's a Shiv with the mana knocked off.
Yeah, that's the nuts. The nuts. Okay, so this deck, this Miracle Rogue deck, again, shaping out based on trajectory of improvement. We know about Miracle Rogue. It always does this. High skill cap deck, takes time to figure out. Once it's figured out, people learn how to play it better and better over time, and it becomes the nuts. This deck looks like the best deck at Top Legend. This deck is going to be number one. Looks like a tier one deck at Top Legend based on its trajectory. And I'm just like, we know how this deck behaves. So Miracle Rogue is going to be really good. At lower MMRs, I'm not sure how good this deck is. I will say this is probably easier to play than the Dancer Draka build. So it might be good at lower rank brackets as well. You know, sometimes you just win with a Jarak. Get a Colossal and you just win. Krabatoa, you know, just beats board decks. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, Draka, no. Alternative win conditions. Krabatoa, Queen Ajara, maybe something else. Hipster is a clever card. Like, it's not an amazing card, but it's a clever card to run against Blood Death Knights. In fact, this Miracle Rogue build solves the Death Knight problem. Against Blood Death Knight, this matchup is close to 50-50, which sounds surprising because Miracle Rogue doesn't seem like a deck that has that many threats that can kill the Blood Death Knight, but it actually is close to a 50-50 matchup. And Miracle Rogue, very good. There's another Rogue deck that looks competitive and has potential, which is the Secret Rogue deck. Again, it's kind of it's very similar to Miracle Rogue in terms of running Ajara and Krabatoa at the top end. Just that instead of like Sinstone Graveyard and running like, you know, that kind of package that supports Graveyard, you just run the Secret package. And what's good about the Secret package and what makes it really effective against a deck like Blood Death Knight is that you just starve it out of cards. You just Gravedigger it. Gravedigger as, like, if you're playing Blood Death Knight and you face Gravedigger, it is so, so annoying. They just take out cards from your hand and you just starve you. So that Disruption package with Perjury, which is also a very annoying card, and playing Hanar and getting objections and just not letting the Blood Death Knight play the game is very hard to deal with as a Blood Death Knight. And this deck is another deck that's shaping up to be an effective counter to Blood Death Knight. Like Secret Rogue, also Miracle Rogue looks good against, like, I expect that after refinement, both of these Rogue decks are going to be significant counters to Blood. This is what it's shaping up to be based on the last couple of days. Rogue is on top. Rogue is back on top. Took it 5 days to figure itself out. Yeah, Miracle Rogue. So, and again, based on day one of data, Miracle Rogue was trash, unplayable, garbage, and now best deck in the game at Top Legend. Okay. Warlock. Warlock for me, Hat, is the disappointment of this expansion, for sure.
I was talking to Banter about this. I love the Warlock cards, and I don't like any of the Warlock decks.
Yeah. So, I made two big errors in the preview. I got a lot of things right, and I'm proud of. Like Banshee, Ghost Rider, Hipster. People underestimated those cards, and they're ending up looking pretty good. Demon Hunter being good. Yeah. So there were a lot of things that I'm happy that I got right. Again, it doesn't matter to me that much. But when it comes to the things that I got wrong, it's very obvious why I got them wrong. I got baited by nostalgia. You look at Master of a Battle and all the Dude cards, they blinded me to what was actually powerful in Paladin. And I got blinded by Voidcaller Mal'Ganis. I got, oh, this is perfect. I made a perfect Chad Warlock deck. It looks so clean. Just go to the website. Look how beautiful that deck list is. It's beautiful.
I played it.
It's beautiful, but it's not good. Yeah, Chad Warlock just still missing something. I don't know what it is, but it's just missing something. The late game isn't there. It doesn't even beat Blood Death Knight. It's so weird. You're playing, like, you have the option to run Riven there even, and it doesn't beat Blood Knight, Death Knight still. It's just so disappointing. It's just not good. Like, Chad is not Chad. It's not the Giga Chad. It might take some more time.
It's more like sad Warlock.
Yeah.
Aw, Sadius.
Also, Symphony of Sins, we overrated it. Everyone overrated it. It's not as good as we thought it would be.
Because everyone wanted it to be good. It's fun. It's a rad card. It's not that great. If you could pick from the seven options and not just three, it would be good.
Yeah. Also, Fellstring Harp, not nearly as good as we thought it would be. It's like a okay card, but it's not a game changer for the deck or for Warlock in general. It's just a serviceable card. It is not a meta-defining card. And Symphony of Sin, again, it's a card that you can play, and it's okay, but it's kind of borderline, and it's not even, like, I thought it would be one of the best cards, but it's not. It's nowhere near that. Symphony of Sin is very meh. I'll try to look into data and see whether Chad Warlock is missing something in terms of refinement, in terms of building the deck. Maybe he needs to do something a little bit different. But so far, not great. Also, Jailer, not great in this. Like, it's not working out great. The Jailer Mal'Ganis fantasy is a fantasy that looks good on paper, but it doesn't seem to work in practice particularly well. So Chad Warlock is not it. Also, Imp Warlock, very disappointing. Imp Warlock does not look good at all. It, you know, there's the fatigue build with the fatigue package, and I will say the fatigue cards are actually pretty good. It's just that other decks in the format are just more powerful. Like, the fatigue package definitely fits into Imp Warlock. These are not bad cards. It's not like that Imp Warlock got baited by running the fatigue package. It's just that it's not enough. Like, Imp Warlock doesn't do powerful enough things to compete with the best decks.
There's not a reason, if you want to play this kind of strategy, to do it this way. And the cards that left are a big, big deal. Wicked Shipment, Shady Bartender, and Tammy Hero were reasons to play Warlock that gave it the competitive edge. And you just don't have those anymore. They're just gone.
Yeah, but we have Defile Hat. How is a deck with Defile and Voidcaller Mal'Ganis and Hans Dreadlord? Why is it so bad? It's really, I'm surprised by it. But it looks so pretty. The deck is so pretty. And Symphony of Sins is such a beautiful card. Such a shame. Anyway, buff Symphony of Sins. Make it 5 mana, Blizzard.
No. You keep that flavor right where it is. Let me discover from all 7 options. Then we're talking.
Oh, okay. Discover from 7 options? Interesting idea I had. But do we really want to... Is that really the way? Maybe.
The number 6 is integral to the card. I understand, like, feelings, nerfs based on the design. I don't normally care about that. Putting Azoth to 9, whatever, I don't care. This card has 6 plastered all over it. You can't get away from it.
Discover from 7 is actually a pretty good idea to buff this card.
Because that's... Right, because the options are good, just like when you low roll, it's
but can they actually do it? Can you actually discover? I think it's limited to the 3, right? Oh, there are cards that give you 4 discover options.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a science doctor. I'm sure they can figure it out.
7. Let me choose whatever.
The way you could implement it is you do the first wave is 4 cards. You show 3 options, and the 4th option is the other 4. And then you click that, and then you see the other 4.
Hmm. You can do that, yeah. Oh, you can re-roll, yeah. Yeah, you can do
that. Well, not re-roll, 100%. It's just you get the exact other 4.
The exact other 4. You get 3 choices and then 4, which is going to the other one, and then you click on that, and you get the 4 options left. Yes. Let's do
there
that, Blizzard.
See,
let's
figure do that, it out. Blizzard. I'll open a ticket.
Yeah, open a ticket. We're buffing Symphony. I want to play that card. Anyway, Warlock sucks. Okay.
Aw, now I'm sad.
Yeah, I'll look into it. I'll try to find something, but so far I'm not seeing anything promising.
Okay, but what about Mage? Do you see anything that has surprised you about Mage?
Yeah, okay, so Mage... Day one, day two, Giga Garbage. The worst class in the game. Worse than Warrior. It had a win rate under 40%. Lycho, garbage. DJ Manastorm, garbage. I actually got Giga baited by the Theorycraft. I played these decks during the Theorycrafting streams.
Oh, this was your first Theorycrafting stream, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was my first. So I knew about it.
But you know, academically, it's really hard to resist the feeling when you're playing with the cards of like, that was a good turn, that was a good game.
Yeah, exactly. You remember when in Ashes of Outland, Firebat like had an insane win rate with Highlander DH. And that deck was like stayed kind of in the game for like months after. People kept playing. It was terrible. But it did really well in the Theorycrafting stream. And I was playing during the Theorycrafting stream. I said to myself, I'm winning with Mage. I'm playing the Mana Storm Mage. And I'm playing the Lycho Mage. And I'm winning games. It looks good. And then I look at the data after this expansion launches. And they have like 30% win rates. What? They have 30% win. I'm saying, okay, it was a bait. And I understand Theorycrafting doesn't say anything because everybody playing garbage decks. But to go from that to 30% win rates, like Lycho Mage, is just completely unplayable. That caught me off guard. I will admit that. But yeah. So the Mana Storm Lycho, giga garbage. There's some Mech Mage. It's also not very good. However, Mage is not dead. It's not dead. Because turns out there was one deck in the Theorycrafting article that we made. That's actually really good. And that is the Aggro Mage.
Frozen Touch is a strong card. When you were talking about, so I've been playing some of this. When you're talking about how Control Priest has just no chance in some matchups, you mentioned Relic Demon Hunter, but this is the one I was thinking of. They cannot come close to beating you.
You have a lot of damage.
I played against Asmo on stream. I beat 3 Blackwater Behemoths. Because like it just didn't matter. I just killed my own Egwene minion every turn. And it just was completely irrelevant. Like, I must have dealt over 100 damage that game.
Yeah, there's just... Yeah, this deck is capable... Like, it's an aggro deck, but it's capable of having a lot of late game damage. And the list in the... that actually published in the Theorycrafting article is actually looking perfect. Like... The Rolling Stone is working. Audio Medic is a good card in that deck. It's just a good deck. And the thing is, I think this deck only loses to Blood Death Knight and Frost. Like, Death Knight is a tough matchup against every other class that's looking really strong. It's good against Demon Hunter. It's good against Rogues. It's pretty good against. It's really good against Druids. Against Tony Druid, you just pressure them very, very effectively. And yeah, this deck is really good. I'm actually not sure about Pazic, but the deck is good. So the Aggro Mage is very competitive, and Mage is not actually dead. And it's kind of funny because this deck existed on day one, but just nobody cared to play it. It wasn't interesting enough because everybody was fixated. I want to make Lycho work. I want to make Mana Storm work. I don't care about this Aggro Frost Mage, former Frost Mage deck that, you know, is running a few new cards. They're not exciting, right? But then No Hands Gamer picked it up and he did really well with it and it propagated from there. So this deck is very good and Mage is competitive. It's not a dead class. This deck is tier 2, tier 1 potentially. Somewhere around that mark. It's strong. Okay. Hunter. Hunter is kind of funny. It's doing weird stuff. Face Hunter is fine. It's competitive. It kind of struggled a bit against the Blood Death Knights. But I suspect that if people continue to countering Blood Death Knight very effectively, then Face Hunter will have its time to shine. It's looking very tier 2-ish kind of deck. And it's doing some funny things. A popular inclusion in Face Hunter is Queen Azara. The reason why you run Queen Azara is you have a lot of spells, so you activate Azara very easily. And Azara is actually a reasonable card in the deck.
The difficulty might be that you run Azjara and Pazic and Mukla? Because Mukla is not a bad card in this deck. Mukla is pretty good. So we have to see if we can fit everything in. But Face Hunter definitely has potential. It's looking like a decent deck with maybe some more late game than I anticipated. Maybe you run Astalor and Azjara. And you have... It's kind of a Naga Hunter with like the ability to go face, but you also have late game. Some you can lean into the late game and win later than Face Hunter would normally do. Maybe this is actually a Naga Hunter rather than a pure Face Hunter. Because sometimes it feels like Face Hunter. You just play a Vicious Lither Spear and you put a bunch of bananas on it and you just kill your opponent. But sometimes you can lean late game. It's actually quite interesting. So that's a deck that looks promising and is very competitive. In addition, people are trying Big Beast. Big Beast looks bad, but there are some builds that like play a little bit of the Big Beast. Like, not the whole package. Not like Big Dreams going all in on Beast.
No, you can't do that. You could play like a couple.
You basically, what you do is you play like a Renathal face Naga Hunter with some Beast top end. And kind of like a hybrid between the face Naga and the Big Beast. And that also seems to work okay. That deck is okay. I'm not sure if it's good enough. I'm not sure it's better than the face Naga. It's probably not better than the face Naga. But it does exist as an idea. Regardless, I think Face Hunter is fine. I think this deck is going to be competitive. It's going to be relevant. It's definitely okay. It's not seeing much play because there's not much fanfare around it and people might not care as much, but Hunter is relevant. You can do well with Hunter if you really like the class. It's definitely not Warlock. Warlock is struggling. Warlock is nothing, right? Warlock is the first class so far that we talked about that is really struggling. But Hunter is okay.
Yeah. We've got a couple more classes left, and at least one of them is also really struggling.
Yeah. Shaman is not one of them. Because Shaman, Toto Shaman is pretty good. All the Overload stuff, forget it.
No, it didn't work. The Shaman stuff, like, in any other format, I would call these Bloodlust Shamans. But these lists don't always run Bloodlust, so I'm going to call them Rotgill Shamans. All the Rotgill Shaman decks are great.
Or just call it Totem Shaman.
Well, like, there are lists that touch the Menagerie stuff, right? They all have some element of the Totem package, but there are lists that touch the Menagerie stuff.
There's Totem Shaman and there's, like, Menagerie Totem Shaman. That is true. There are some builds that are more Menagerie with, like, Party Animal and stuff. Even running Brass Elemental.
Clownfish Gorlock. Well, Dog ran Brass Elemental, so people are going to run it, but...
Who doesn't run Clownfish Gorlock? You always run Clownfish Gorlock, even in the Totem Shaman. Okay, so... But yeah, basically, Totem Shaman looks good. I think I overrated Jive, though. Jive might not be the card that you want to run, and when you're talking about Bloodlust, probably you just run Bloodlust.
Good card.
Yeah, I wanted to try the new card. I wanted to see how Jive does, but Jive is actually kind of meh in this Totem Shaman deck. So we'll probably just cut the Jive, run Bloodlust, maybe run even two and just kill him. It's probably what you do. I kind of suspected that this would happen, but I kind of built the deck and it was kind of pretty without Bloodlust, so I kept no Bloodlust. I said, whatever. Like, it's good without Bloodlust, but it's probably better with Bloodlust. That's what I'm saying. Anyway. Yeah, so it's pretty simple. If you want to build, like, take the theorycrafting list that we have in the theorycrafting article, take out Jive, take out like a Party Favor Totem or something like that, and run to Bloodlust, and I think the deck is good.
And that is unfortunately it for Shaman. It's very funny if you go on HSR and sort the decks page for Shaman, the top is all Totem and the bottom is all Big Shaman. Five Big Shaman lists in a row at the bottom.
What is Big Shaman hat? What the hell is Big Shaman? It's not Big Shaman. It's just Overload.
Well, like,
Who's calling it Big Shaman?
There is a deck here with From the Other Side, and the other four have Criminal Lineup.
That's not Big Shaman, though. It's just to copy the rack. That doesn't make it a big deck.
I'm just saying.
Come on, HS Replay. HS Replay naming is just really suspect sometimes.
It doesn't matter. The bottom Totem Shaman deck is still 8% better win rate than the top Big Shaman deck. It doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter if you call it Big, you call it Overload. I don't care. We're not going to see it. It's just not a thing.
Dude, it's Overload Shaman. It sucks. Okay? It just sucks. Totem Shaman is good.
And then, speaking of things with a low win rate, why don't we talk about Warrior?
Yeah, I want to talk about Warrior. And Warrior is Giga Garbage, and it's not getting better. Tony Warrior has a win rate in the 20s.
I will mention that you warned me about this deck on the air on this show.
What?
You were concerned.
I am concerned. I am still concerned. I'll tell you why I'm concerned. It's not because of the current Tony Warrior. It's more of a big picture thing. I played against this deck in the Theorycrafting, during the Theorycrafting streams, and I beat it every time. I had a 100% win rate. I kind of felt like, yeah, it was going to be trash. But it might still become a problem eventually. But forget about that. Let's get to the nitty-gritty here. Control Warrior, garbage. Menagerie Warrior, pretty bad. Not good enough. Not really going to survive. But I will say this, and I'm not saying this just because I want to sound right. Black Rock and Roll is a nutty card. What I'm seeing from the Control Warrior that runs Black Rock and Roll, you know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing Spell Mage before it got Refreshing Spring Water. Because Black Rock and Roll looks like absolutely a card that's powerful enough to be a legitimate win condition for Control Warrior. This card is very strong. This is Encanter's Flow, Deck of Lunacy tier card.
Wow, the Mulligan win rate is 12% higher than any other card in the deck.
This card is absolutely a win condition. This is the best card that Warrior has. Warrior has the lethality. Warrior's got the ability now to finish games very effectively. What Warrior is missing is better survivability tool. Drum Kit is okay on turn 4 and absolutely terrible after turn 4. It is a card that is horrendous to draw later in the game. I think that it can be better. I think we can work to make it better. The other survivability tools that Warrior has are just not good, considering that you have Drum Kit, which is not even a great card, and then you have to waste so many deck slots just to boost it with like Rockstar and all that nonsense. Like, it's like a 10-card package that doesn't even make you survivable. Like, it doesn't help you live that much. So it's kind of garbage. But I'm pretty sure that if Warrior actually got a supporting shell that is not as good as a 2014 Control Warrior, then this deck would be very competitive. And Black Rock and Roll would be a very intimidating card. Like, this card kills opponents. In combination with Theron, they actually work in great synergy together. Theron is not a card that you keep in a mulligan, but it's a card that you want in the deck, because once you play Black Rock and Roll and Theron, Remornia just kills you. Trendstalker just kills you. They just die. They're not going to live. It's dead. You just OTK them. So this is absolutely something that has promise. It's just that other cards are just... We're running Brawl in 2023. It's just not good enough. You know? And Drum Kit is a very disappointing card. This card could have been better. So, I'm saying this right now. This is Spell Mage before I got Refreshing Spring Water in Barrens. So, even though Warrior is trash, there is hope for the future because it actually got win conditions. So, We have Black Rock and Roll as a win condition. The other win condition is Tony. The thing about Tony Warrior, and the reason why it's much worse than, like, Black Rock and Roll Control Warrior is like a very deep tier 4 deck. It's a deck with a slightly above 40% win rate with its current tools. Tony Warrior's win rate is in the 20s. And the reason why is because it's even more limited as a deck, as a shell, that needs to play Rifts, which suck. The Rifts are not good cards. And the win condition leaves you much more vulnerable because you need to spend so much mana on playing stuff that doesn't really impact the board. You need to play Tony, Fires of Zinajari. You then need to play Steam Cleaner. Sometimes you just die in those turns to the opponent. The survivability tools are just not there. And Rifts are just underwhelming cards. They're not the worst cards in the world. They're not garbage, but they just could have been better. You can make every Rift cost one less mana. I don't think they would be broken. The problem is, Hat, is that I feel like we're almost limited in our ability to buff Warrior, because if you ever buff Warrior to be very survivable, you can accidentally make Tony Warrior a good deck. And you never want this deck to be good. It almost makes me want to just preemptively nerf Tony, which might become a problem in Druid too, eventually, to just get rid of this card, because it's not fun to get your deck deleted this quickly. And Druid can do it very quickly, fairly quickly with an Ubercon as well. Just get rid of it so you can just buff the rest of the Warrior kit. This is what I think, that it's a possibility that you're going to have to do something like that. But yeah, Warrior is currently struggling, but its win conditions are actually scary, especially Black Rock and Roll. Black Rock and Roll is absolutely a good card. Like I'm seeing, the data screams at me that this is a ticking time bomb. Eventually, this card is going to be in a deck, in a very competitive deck. It's just that the rest of the stuff is just garbage. Like Drunkit requires like 10 deck slots to support. It's not even a good card. So, yeah. And, you know, Mech Warrior is just like, it's just a bad menagerie deck. It doesn't have, like, you run so many neutral. Oh, Voon. Can we make Voon 3 mana? Hello?
So, I don't know what the solution is for Menagerie Warrior, but I actually feel like that deck has more than enough value. It just...
No, it's not just that. But do you agree, Hat, that the Legendary that's supposed to be the build-around card for Menagerie Warrior should not be the worst card in Menagerie Warrior?
It's literally the worst card. Okay.
No, I mean, but it's the worst card in Menagerie Warrior. The worst card in Menagerie Warrior is Voon. You should not be running Voon in your cheap, low-curve Menagerie Warrior. So what's the point of this card? Just make it 3 mana. Like, what? Like, the Warrior set, you can... I feel like the entire Warrior set, you can reduce all of the cards by 1 mana, and none of them would be broken. It's insane. None of them would be broken. Just take... Think the Warrior set, make all of its cards cost one less mana, and it would be fine. Even Power Slider and Roaring Applause. They would be really good, right? You shouldn't buff them, but I'm just saying, it wouldn't break the game. That's kind of my point. Power Slider could be a 1-3. Why is Rhyme Spinner a 1-3 and this is a 1-2? Why? Make the payoff actually good. It's kind of insane that the payoff for the Menagerie Warrior decks, like the payoff cards, are not even good.
So have you played this? I found Power Slider to be pretty decent. I just couldn't find a way to kill my opponents.
No, Hat, look. If you're making a deck and you're giving class-specific payoffs, those cards need to be the more powerful cards of the deck. If Power Slider is not even the 5th or 10th best card in the deck, we have a problem. Like, that's not exciting. Power Slider needs to be a payoff. Voon needs to be the cornerstone card for the archetype. It is absurd that this is the worst card in the deck. Just make it 3 mana. 3 mana, 4-3. It's fine. Nothing's going to happen. Make all the Rifts count 1 mana less. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that I see When I look at the Menagerie Warrior Mulligans, the cards in the positive section, air quotes, are neutrals. And then the class cards are lower.
I mean, that's fine because Roaring Applause is not something you should keep keeping in the mulligan. And Power Slider is something that scales later. But why is Power Slider such a meh payoff? Just make it good. Make it good.
I don't think it's like that number gets pretty big. It gets pretty big pretty quickly. I think the card's solid. I just want to be able to kill people. That's what I found I can't do when playing this deck. I don't have a way to kill people. Like, you just kind of generate a bunch of value over and over again, and then you just sit there and wait for your stuff to die.
Yeah, it might lack finishing potential, but come on. Make the cards that you actually printed for people to play the Menagerie Warrior deck, make them actually good. It's kind of insane that Voon is this bad. But yeah, Warrior needs work. It needs buffs. I think it's easy to buff this class. I am concerned about... I know it sounds funny, and it's probably going to not happen anytime soon, but the Tony win condition annoys me. The existence of this thing annoys me because it makes you wary of over-buffing Warrior to the point this is actually good. I want to buff Warrior to the point where Black Rock and Roll is a playable deck. I don't want to buff it to the point where Tony Warrior is a playable deck. You know what I mean? Because that's kind of toxic. I don't want that. But yeah, so Warrior, I think Warrior has a strange problem. It's a very different problem than what it had over the previous year, since it was nerfed in Sunken City, where it had the survivability tools, but it didn't have the finishing potential. Now it actually had really good finishing potential. It just doesn't have the other tools, the other stuff. So give Warrior that, it will be very competitive. But yeah, that is it.
All right.
I am hoping in the patch that they're probably going to introduce, I'm expecting a patch on the 25th. Probably yeah. That's the usual timing that they have. I'm hoping for buffs more than I'm hoping for nerfs. I don't think that there is a single deck in the format right now that I'm dying to nerf. Things are still developing. As you can see, things are being discovered on a daily basis, and I expect that there will be more discoveries by the time we actually publish our report that's coming on Thursday. So you should tune in for that. There's probably going to be a lot more stuff, maybe even stuff contradictory to what I just said in this very podcast by the time the report is out. So because there's going to be changes in the format. So is there something that I clearly have to address with balance changes that looks too powerful? Not really. You can nudge some things, sure. What we need is buffs. Make the cool mage stuff better. Make Warlock better. Make Warrior better. Make the other stuff that has failed in other classes better. So that people can get more, like Shaman, the Overload stuff. Make it better. Like it's 40%, 30% win rate. Just make it better. And we'll have a better format, more diverse format. If you nerf things, if you only focus on nerfing stuff, the number of playable decks is just going to go down. No nerfs that you're going to make is going to make Warlock better or Warrior better. It's just going to make the best classes that are not nerfed, make them the best, right? And they're just going to keep dominating out of, you know, almost as if like we're the only classes that have good tools, so we're playable. While, you know, there's so many other packages that just don't see play because they suck. They fundamentally suck, Hat. Fundamentally. They suck.
Fundamentally flawed. You heard it here first. Yeah, it's the... So the Tuesday 25th date, as far as I'm concerned, unless something comes up, that is my lock-in date. The window for doing changes after an expansion is 9 to 14 days, which would put it between the 20th and 25th, except there's a Master's Tour on the 22nd. So they are not going to patch on the 20th. Which means they're going to patch on the 25th. In addition, Aleko said, we'll be doing buffs in the next patch. If things look how they do now when we're putting that patch together, then those will include some Warrior buffs. That's pretty clear.
Yeah. Rifts, minus one mana to older rifts. Let's start with that.
Don't get attached to solutions, just be aware that they know the problems. We'll see what they do. Sure, they have ideas.
Drumkit, 3 mana. Let's go.
We'll see what they do. But we've got a couple weeks. But either way, listeners, thank you so much for being here for our inaugural episode for Festival of Legends. Early impressions, remember, things may change, but we'll be back. And VS Gold, VS Silver Patreon supporters, thank you so much for your support of the show, for subbing, supporting, everything. You can look forward to our next report on Thursday the 20th. Check out the website. Evil Dave, thank you so much for the transcriptions. And Steven Sensei, thank you so much for the intro and outro. We'll talk to you all soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content at viciousyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.